I went into the jails for 20 years doing a program called The Power of Mascara, Looking Better, Feeling Better. And
wow.
I talked to everybody in the jails the same way. I mean, and people go, you did? You know what? I think the fact that when you think about you're in jail, you've been in prison now for a while. These were women that were going to be transitioning out. And going out in the world, and so many of them, they felt so badly about themselves. Low self-esteem was just, you know, at the highest it could be. And this was my way of contribution to sort of show a no makeup, makeup look, how they could still look like themselves, but feel better.
Welcome to the Glam and Grow podcast. I'm your host, Takara Sewitt, head of partnerships at Wavebreak. On this show, we talk with leaders of beauty, fashion, and lifestyle brands. We dive into their stories, lessons learned, and perspectives on how the industry is ever evolving. Subscribe and join us each week as we glam and grow. This episode is brought to you by Wavebreak. Most brands don't email right, and it costs them. With ad costs getting more and more expensive, a world-class email and SMS program is essential. This is why Wavebreak exists. We're the premier email and SMS marketing agency that helps brands take their retention programs to the next level. If you want to learn more about partnering with us and how we can help, schedule a call with me today at wavebreak.co/call. Joining me today on Glam and Grow is Victoria Jackson, founder of No Makeup Makeup. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I am really excited to talk to you. But before we dive into the brand today, let's start with your background. You've had this full career in beauty and sort of took a hiatus, if you will, before founding No Makeup Makeup. So tell me about your story and sort of at a high level, how you've seen the industry change.
Well, it's interesting because people go, oh, wow, you know, No Makeup Makeup is really trending now. And I always say, well, it's been trending for me since like the 80s when I started. So I did, you know, I was really, as they say, the pioneer in the infomercial world and did my No Makeup Makeup, really Victoria Jackson Cosmetics in the late 80s, my first infomercial. And so for me, it's been a philosophy that has withstood the test of time, certainly not only in my own mind and how I really organize my products and how I think about makeup and my messaging. But I think it's always something that goes deeper than, you know, just the product, but it's a look better, feel better, self-esteem message.
So talk to me about that time in the 80s. I'm sure you've seen trends come and go. I feel like trends sometimes is a little bit extreme, but like styles of makeup that seem maybe timeless at the time sort of come and go. So how would you say it's evolved since the 80s? And were people really receptive to the no makeup makeup in the 80s? Because I feel like people were wearing a lot more makeup back then.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think people were definitely wearing a lot more makeup. That's what was so unusual about the time that I was like, no makeup, makeup, while people were wearing shoulder pads and, you know, kind of like going to the clubs and, you know, all the disco makeup and all. But, you know, I think there's always a time and a place that just finds itself. It's never going to go out of style. It's like fashion, you know, things come and go. But I really do believe there's always the woman out there, the women out there, the men out there that just don't want to look like they have anything on and just really want to feel like themselves. And even now with my makeup line, we say, you know, wear less so that you can show up more. That's been message for me since the beginning of time. It's always been about wearing less so that you can show up more, so that, you know, I wanted people to like, okay, I'm going to teach you how to have fuller lips and bigger eyes and give you the beautiful foundation. But now you got to go out there and like, you know, kick some ass in the world and use that.
And what made you sort of pioneer this concept? Was it like sort of you were unhappy with your foundation at the time, or you just felt like makeup was sort of hiding part of people's identity? Like what drew you to this concept, if you will?
I'd say all of that and my ongoing low self-esteem myself and this sense of like, oh my gosh, if I can do this, you can. And also scarcity in the marketplace. I didn't see any, there was, I was a working makeup artist, self-taught, didn't have the natural talent. I taught myself how to do it. And when I was doing it, I always wanted to create more of this natural look, but I couldn't find a foundation that would work. Everything at the time, again, going back more in the Hollywood days, you know, there was, everything was more of an orangey text, you know, undertone to pink, but there was nothing in this kind of natural, neutral beige with a little more yellow undertone to counter the red in the skin. So I wasn't finding anything that I could actually use on my jobs. And I thought, well, I'm going to create something. And I did literally take a little of this, a little of that, mix it in pots and pans, and make my first concoction, which then went to a more, you know, formalized cosmetic chemist that we actually started creating for my first infomercial.
And let's talk about the infomercials, because I find that really interesting. I feel like, and we're definitely going to dive into marketing, like how the landscape has changed in digital marketing. But talk to me about, like, I read a stat somewhere you made like a million, correct me if I'm wrong, you made $1 million in a day, hour.
Well, no, my first week, you know, first airing in our testing.
Which, like, adjusted for inflation is, like, insane. Like, were you expecting that? And what do you think was part of the success of those infomercials? Do you think this was just something women were, like, really looking for that they didn't know they needed?
I think the biggest thing was, obviously, I had 30 minutes to tell a story, right? And it was very highly demonstrable and educational. So I could not only like really demonstrate the product, but I was teaching you, because I was also at that time a working makeup artist, but teaching a class at UCLA, a 3-hour once a week class that actually took you through how to do your makeup. And so I really incorporated all of that into this pitch that I was doing on television with a product that I really believed in. Like, you know, you were saying how you love the foundation, no makeup, makeup.
Yes, I will share that in the recording, because I said that before we hit record. I got to say my thoughts in the recording.
But it's because when you really believe in something, as I did, as I do now, it's kind of easy for me to go, oh my gosh, you got to try this. It's amazing. And I had a half an hour to actually show you, like, did my famous half faces, you know, which everyone says, wow, that was such a brilliant marketing idea.
It's really
honestly
brilliant.
It was just demonstrable. You could sort of go, wow, here it is, you know, her skin without, here it is on, and here's how little I use. And so people see that there, at the time, there were no like filters and the iPhones, and it's like, this is just real. So it was pretty amazing. And so probably the heyday of my infomercials, which I did over 13 years.
Wow.
I did ultimately do $1 billion in sales and QVC. And that was QVC, which I'm now back on again.
That's awesome.
I could message, you know, I could show what it is the product does and, you know, have people respond in real time.
Has your pitch, for lack of a better word, shifted, you know, QVC then versus now? Or like, is it coming from a place of such authenticity that it sort of stood the test of time?
Yep. Thank you for saying it, because that's exactly right. It is from a complete place of authenticity, of knowing that I wasn't going to come back until I had what I felt like was the greatest foundation, and wanting to be able to sort of like shout it from the rooftops, you know, and being able to as well demonstrate it. And because I had done QVC for 10 years, I just got back in it. I didn't know if I would or how it would go. I think the things that are different now, as I feel like, you know, I've been asleep for the last 15, 16 years in terms of, you know, I was in the world of medicine and medical research, to come back like from medical foundation to cosmetic foundation. You know, I've TikTok lives and Instagrams and all these other forms of marketing, you know, came about while I've been, you know, doing my other things. So I've definitely had to learn how to adapt.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I bet for people who've been in the industry for such a long time, like, did you find it challenging to adapt, or did it feel like, what do you think about like TikTok and social media? Like, do you think it's the greatest thing ever as like a brand founder and someone who loves to like put their story out there, or did you find it like a learning curve, if you will, to sort of transition to this like really fast paced, different, you know, incessant level of content? It's like doing this amazing infomercial for 30 minutes versus now it's like it never stops.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's basically, sure, wouldn't we all just love the days as, you know, when you've created a product that you actually get 30 minutes? I didn't realize what a luxury that was
until
like, you know, 10 seconds
yeah.
and people's attention span. And even, you know, I had, now I'm talking to you in a podcast, I had my own radio show. I
wow.
was saying, like, it wasn't like called a podcast then. It was like, I just had my own radio show on KFOX Redondo Beach where, you know, I would have my little, you know, music that led into my show where I would go, okay, today we're going to do eyes. And, you know, people would follow along. And they said, if I could get people to call in, they gave me free airtime. So I've done a lot of different things, but clearly having to figure out and work with this new world we're in of, you know, the, you know, very people have to get it like right away. But I stay true. You know, my message is pretty, is always stayed the same. It's very authentic to me and to the product.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned your top tips for doing makeup. I'm curious, you know, in that 30 minute period, is that, are you sort of doing similar tips or like, what would you say is your top tip and what's really resonated with people?
I mean, the biggest thing is the education. So many women were afraid to admit that they really didn't know how to do their makeup or feel comfortable doing their makeup or, you know, like wanted certain things like the fuller lips, but didn't really know how to do it. So I think the biggest thing is shade selection was always, when I'm thinking about creating a product, I'm making shades and things that I know are going to be universal and yet still really flattering on people. When I did my peaches, pinks, and red color coordinated kits, it was all like, oh, okay, do I respond more to all the peaches or do I respond more all to pinks? Or, oh, I'm a little more fashion, fun forward. I want to explore more in the reds and more glamour, you know? So I'm always thinking of how women are going to look at things. I'm trying to address what their concerns were or maybe even where they have anxiety about makeup. And I try to dispel all of that.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of anxiety around makeup. As someone who feels I do a really good job on my makeup most of the time, sometimes I will spend like so much time doing my makeup and then I go and then I'm like walking in a restaurant. I see myself in the mirror and I'm like, oh, wow. Like I did not blend that. I like missed.
Yeah.
Like, but especially with foundation. And this is what I was saying to you before we hit record, like the product blends into the skin so seamlessly. I feel like most of my foundations and like I am relatively happy with them, but there's always this like disconnect from like face to neck. And I, no matter how much I blend or what I do, like it just doesn't, I don't know, maybe my yeah. face and my neck are different colors. I don't know what's going on there, but I feel like this product is, especially now in this, and I don't know if this is something you've thought about in this world of like athleisure and more like prior to COVID, I went out, I did my makeup very glamorously, always had, you know, big eyes and whatever. And now I've kind of segued into this more like athleisure, very no makeup look, which I didn't realize was quite the thing that it was. And it's like this type of product makes me feel like I'm wearing absolutely nothing, but I'm not wearing nothing. And then if I'm,
yeah.
you know, I'm in Target, I still look presentable and like, but I could also wear it out to dinner, but it's sort of like on trend. Not that I think it's a trend. I think it's a lifestyle that's here to stay
yeah.
where you can like run to Walmart and you look good, but not like super done up, but you look presentable. Is that sort
yeah.
of the, like, is that sort of how you've transitioned, how you've thought about it?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been to me that way, that it's a lifestyle. It really is, you know, and it's really easy. And for me, even when I was writing, you know, I've written 5 books, 2 of them beauty books. And, you know, I would put in the 2-minute, 5-minute and 10-minute makeover. So like even at 10 minutes, you were sort of like, that was your max for going out, you know, like when you were really getting dressed up. Because I think, you know, the more I always say, okay, let's limit our mirror time. You know, the more we're in mirror time and magnification land,
the magnification is scary.
Yeah, we start picking apart ourselves and start, you know, there's a thing that starts happening where if you got to kind of like get it on and go, it's funny how like you're kinder to yourself than if you've got a lot of time and you're just sitting there and picking out, you know, every little what you think is a problem or flaw on your face.
And then I feel like you end up potentially putting on way too much makeup because you're like, oh, I can do this more or I can do this more. And then it's just like, it's just too much. I also think, and maybe this is sort of your not incentive, but sort of your goal as well. Like, I feel like as I've aged, I look way better with less makeup, which is something I really wasn't expecting. Like, I'll put on, like, sometimes if I'm like really going out, I'm like, oh, let me do my makeup like more. And then I do it and I kind of regret it, which is crazy. I feel like it's sort of transition. I see photos of myself in my mid 20s and I'm like, wow, I actually look older then, which I didn't, but it's solely from the makeup. So it's so interesting that you pioneered this term, you know, what is it, 40 years ago? And now it's like something I'd never really heard of before. And then in the last couple of years, I really think because of COVID, it really became like, that is everybody's goal, the no makeup, makeup look.
Yeah, because it does, when you wear more, it does age you. Like, I'm getting ready in 2 months or end of August, I'll be turning 70.
No.
And yes, wow. I am.
Oh my gosh.
Like, and I'm just like, huh, you know what? And people go, oh, you look younger. And I go, thank you. But yes, I'm turning 70. And I've always been about
no makeup.
Oh, thank you. But it's always been about, you know, wearing less. And the more women, as they get older, they think they need more, or they're going to fill in with a lot of powder and it just cakes.
The powder is the worst, I think.
Yeah. And so it's a lot of it is just they don't know. So I did really thinking about it as now a woman at my age and really starting this piece of No Makeup Makeup, the company coming back as somebody over 65 when I started, I'm really thinking about who's going to be wearing it. And I'm not just speaking, people go, well, what's your demographic? I'm talking to everybody. You know, yeah. I was doing and wearing No Makeup Makeup when I was in my 20s, when I was in my teens. And that didn't mean I still couldn't have fun and on a fun night out, like wear more, great. But I'm talking about a lifestyle, you know, so that people get to see you. I'm all about that. I do want people wearing less so that they show up more. It's always been
That's a great tagline. I love that.
Well, thank you. But it really is also just what I call the power of mascara. And, you know, I wrote a book called Make Up Your Life long time ago. And it was really about, you know, now that you look good, feel good, you know, what are you going to do? Like, that's the important pieces to me, is I just want the makeup and my no makeup makeup philosophy, which I'm seeing that a lot of people, it's, you know, it's now their philosophy.
I know, I feel badly saying that. I heard it before I realized it was associated with you. I feel like that,
no,
that trend like really, really took off in the last couple of years. And I realized that's what I was like trying to achieve without actually having like a concept to attach to it. But that's sort of what I've really, it's like completely the lifestyle that I like in every sense, I guess, even in the way I dress now. It's just like a very effortless, more casual, but in like a really like nice way, not in a lazy way, just in a sort of like effortless way.
Yeah.
Let's dive into product and formulation. I'm curious, the products that you were making in the 80s versus now, how have you changed the formula, or is the formula good back then? Okay. Oh yeah.
Oh no.
And sort
absolutely.
Of for anyone listening, which I think this episode is so great for anybody who's either just, in my opinion, anyone who's like just not great at doing their makeup, or sort of like new to the world of makeup, or really looking for some sort of change, and or in that, I'd say like, I don't know, 35 plus range, that like is really trying to like cling on to our youth as long as possible. What is it exactly? It almost feels like a powder meets a concealer meets a foundation, but in like the lightest formulation possible.
Well, we say it's a 4-in-1. It's like a color corrector. So it's really helping, you know, it's camouflaging. So the 4-in-1 color corrector is really taking out any of the redness in your skin, camouflaging, concealing. I mean, it's really, so it's kind of everything so that you don't need, it's a cream balm. It's a cream balm. That's really how we would best describe it, with what I call flex shade technology. And flex shade technology really means it consists of light reflecting pigments that are much more adaptable to your skin tone. And where this becomes super important is when you're in your shade selection. So that if somebody in a light or a light medium, say you're not quite sure, you're probably going to be fine whichever one you get. Right now, for example, I'm telling people as we're going into summer to go a little bit darker. And you were talking about, you know, your neck and your face being different colors, obviously, because your face is getting, you know, more sun.
Is that why? Just in general? Yeah. Is that why? Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I thought, I guess they're just different colors.
Yeah. So there's a little more. I'm not saying that doesn't get any sun, but there's a little more shade under there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why this foundation is made with these pigments that really are much more adaptable. And I made it in Italy because, you know, I find that the pigments and the production is great there. To go on, for example, QVC or any of this, you have to have, it's a clean formula. So it's a different formula than what I was doing then. But then times have changed. Technology has changed. And, you know, you find if you can make a cleaner formula, I mean, that's just why wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. How would you say the actual formulation evolved, like from the 80s? It's sort of like, how did you improve the formula, and how many iterations during the development process did it take to really nail the formulation?
You know, I wasn't going to, as I said, come back until I felt I had it perfect. So my co-founder and CEO, Kim Weilman, who's really the master in formulation and in the lab, we would keep going through samples, and she'd send me things, and I'd be like, nope, we gotta, you know, it's really getting the perfect shade, the right texture, everything. So I'd say we spent a good couple of years just back and forth on just even once the samples were coming back and forth. So it's the same thing in the beginning. You know, I didn't have the availability of pigments to the extent that I do now, the same ones, because they've been refined, you know, whether you're talking about now when people are doing powders, triple milled powders and certain things that, you know, just weren't available or weren't even potentially, you know, they were cost prohibitive at the time. So it's kind of a different world of manufacturing and technology now.
Yeah, absolutely. Just for anyone listening, if they're confused about the color, I love that there's some flexibility within the color range that, you know, if you do a shade up or a shade down, like it'll probably work for you. But for anyone listening who's always found it challenging to color match themselves, is there like something that you offer so someone could color match, or how would someone figure out if they have, you know, pink undertones, yellow undertones? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we have 13 shades, and I've always been really good about showing you, like if you look at some of our ads and even some of the spots that we have coming out that'll air, it's really showing a wide range. So you're seeing, you know, This is Joanna, and this is, you can look at her and you see this is her shade. I always tell women to test on your jawline. Even whether you were buying No Makeup Makeup or you're buying, you know, any other brand, you always want to, a lot of times people are starting up here and they don't realize till they get all the way down here, like, oh, wrong shade. So I'm always saying trying to find your blend right in here. And also this product comes with an amazing brush. So the brush really as well helps not only apply, but just the way it distributes. The product is really the secret sauce to this particular foundation. So for me, you could have a great product, but if you don't also have the great tool or the tip for the application, no matter how great your product is, then this is kind of these two together is, I think, does the trick for sure.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are more familiar with, I would imagine, using liquid foundation. So I'm curious, like, what is the appropriate amount to put on? Is it just sort of like what looks best to the eye? Or do you recommend like certain placements so it blends seamlessly?
Well, we show even in all of our spots, it's really like a tap and a swirl and very little on the brush. And then it's always better to, like, you know, build it, go low, go slow, and then you can just build it up. It's not, you don't need to, like, I think sometimes women just think they need more. You can always add more, you know, and even if you feel you've got too much in any of your makeup, you know, women would be so afraid. I'd go, just, you can wash it off and start over. You know, it's makeup.
Right.
So I try to take the intimidation out of it. And through this technology and the pigments, it really is going to give you a little bit more room to potentially, you know, if you feel you're not sure if you're going to get it right.
Being an expert in makeup, I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on skincare. Do you have any tips or recommendations of how to best prep your skin and really take care of your skin? So this type of foundation, like, you know, for example, if someone has severe acne or a lot of wrinkles, so like it can look the best that it can on your skin.
Yeah. I think this one, and even when I go on QVC and I do demonstrations, and you'll see somebody that sits down in the chair and they've got like the really bad rosacea and their skin is so red. And you're just like, oh my gosh, how is a no makeup makeup going to cover that?
That's surprised. Exactly what I mean. You think like this can't work on somebody like that.
But it does. It's kind of, it's because of the way the pigments, the color correction in it, it's designed to take out red in the skin. So I think having good skin care prior, whatever that is, whether it's just a cleansing, toning, moisturizer, sunscreen, you know, all the basics that we hear kind of ad nauseum all the time, but it's kind of what it is. You want to have the best your skin is, obviously, for any product, mine or anybody's, is going to look better when your skin's in good shape. But this one's also designed to, when it's not in looking its best, and when you've got those little darker brown spots or the rosacea, when you find something that can help do a good job of, you know, concealing that.
Yeah.
But in a natural way.
This question is for me. I'm curious if this is possible. If you get a darker shade, could you use it as a contour?
Oh, absolutely. You're ahead of me already. We do highlight and contour, sure. But we definitely, like I was showing on QVC, like, you know, doing a little shadow and highlight. Absolutely. You know, and like even now I'm using a medium shade, but I'm also using tan.
Oh, okay.
So I'm combining both. So absolutely. It's kind of like, again, I want people to feel confident and experiment a little. What shade are you wearing? Do you wear light medium or medium?
Light medium. Yeah.
Exactly. Light medium. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you could take medium and you could do a little contouring,
you know?
So yeah.
That's great. What's something people still get wrong, would you say, about foundation that you've sort of worked to educate people on?
I think that they just get it wrong in thinking that they need to, you know, apply too much, or they're, you know, and they just go a little bit too heavy. Or again, you know, the basics, maybe they've picked out the wrong shade, or they feel they need to put a primer, then the foundation, then powder. So it becomes this sort of like multi-use thing where they can't think they just have one. So I think that people still feel like they have to use more product and products than they do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's why you have to get away from the mirror as quickly as possible.
Yeah, yes, you do.
Let's talk about branding. Also, do you have the trademark to No Makeup Makeup?
Yes, I do.
And have you had that since the 80s?
Oh, I've been talking about it since the 90s, and it was trademarked in early 2000.
That is what an amazing trademark to have.
Yeah.
So
yes,
I mean, that is an amazing trademark that I think would be almost impossible for somebody to get today.
I think it would be. And that's why it's a registered mark that's on all of my, that's why the brand is No Makeup Makeup.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, it was like, it's like the perfect name for a brand. And I'm sure so many people wanted it, but I'm glad for you that you have it and you were the first to pioneer it and someone didn't, you know, take it from under you. I'm curious, let's talk about the branding, you know, coming back, you know, from decades past to now, what was sort of your vision from an aesthetic standpoint of sort of matching this No Makeup Makeup look? Like, talk to me about the design process and sort of what you wanted to evoke from an aesthetic perspective.
Everything really clean. You know, if you look at the compact, it's even the way we, you know, debossed the logo, and, you know, it's really very, very clean. And it's more of that, you know, call it the quiet luxury. I just call it kind of just very more of a just chic, cool, understated look, because that's really what No Makeup Makeup stands for. So all of the packaging, the design, other products that are coming out that are in the pipeline, although this line will continue to be highly curated. There's not a lot that you're going to see as, you know, you're not going to see 80 SKUs in this line. It was really to me that it just followed kind of the ethos of the company and how we think about No Makeup Makeup.
Do you plan on growing more SKUs, or was the intention sort of like, this is the hero product, this is the product, this is sort of what you need? And like, for example, like, you don't need a concealer with this product.
No, you don't need a concealer with this product, but there will be other products, blush, lipstick. So yeah, we will, because I'm building the perfect No Makeup Makeup face.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. What's been the biggest challenge of growing a brand in this new category and just coming back from, you know, stepping away for some time? What's been the most surprising thing that you've experienced, or the most challenging?
You know, everything, even when I was doing it back then, I mean, there's always challenges, as any entrepreneur knows, or anybody with a new idea. You know, you're kind of looking at the lay of the land and what are going to be the challenges and the obstacles. I think for me, it's more, as I said, taking that 30-minute luxury that I had to be able to tell a story and condensing that to a very short period of time. So I'd say that's probably the biggest challenge to do that. But at the same time, I'm still being able to deal in that new world, but I'm also able to go back into my old world as QVC welcomed me back, and it's been extremely successful. So I'm still getting to go back to what I do and what I know and what I love, demonstrating on a variety of models and showing what the product actually does.
Do you find the QVC customer is vastly different than if you were to do like Meta ads or anything of the sort? Like, do you find you speak differently to that type of customer?
I don't speak differently to anybody. Everybody, you know, we're all human. We're all wanting to look and feel better about ourselves, you know? So everybody, I don't look at it like, I'm going to speak this way to the QVC customer. I'm going to speak this way to, I talk to everybody. I'm like, hey, this is just a great product. It makes your skin look amazing. And, yeah. You know, so I really, that's always been me. I went into the jails for 20 years doing a program called The Power of Mascara, Looking Better, Feeling Better. And wow. I talked to everybody in the jails the same way. I mean, and people go, you did? You know,
wait, now I have to hear about that. What made you, what made you do that?
You know what? I think the fact that when you think about you're going into, you're in jail, you've been in prison now for a while. These were women that were going to be transitioning out. And going out in the world, and so many of them, they felt so badly about themselves. Low self-esteem was just, you know, at the highest it could be. And this was my way of contribution to sort of show a no makeup, makeup look, how they could still look like themselves, but feel better. And, you know, I'd say something like, what do you like your makeup to say? And people would say, well, I want my makeup to say pull over, right? They were using it as a mask or too much makeup. And so it was just a way of, you know, whether I went to the jails for 20 years, working with women that were going through cancer treatments and losing, wow, you know, hair and, you know, pigmentation in their skin. I've always talked to everybody the same way and the same premise. And I, you know, that when you look better, you feel better. When you feel better, it's about what are you going to do going out into the world and showing that that side of your face and your heart.
That's really interesting. Let's talk about marketing from like the emotional component, which I think is that must be such a rewarding like experience, having a brand that can make people, you know, feel so much better about themselves and then potentially make better choices throughout their lives, throughout the day, whatever that looks like on a granular level and a bigger level. You know, I'm curious, like you said, you know, transitioning from a QVC to a marketing. And then, you know, it's interesting to hear your reaction. Like, no, like I'm myself, I'm authentic, I'm always the same. And then it's like sort of this like hybrid approach because now every, you know, most marketers are so focused on the data and like, who is my girl? Who is this girl on TikTok versus, you know, Instagram or whatever that is. It's sort of like, how do you approach leaning into the data and insights that I'm sure a lot of your team look at and want, and then just being sort of your authentic self? And, or is that their job to sort of edit you?
Yeah. No, you know what? It's not really, nobody really, and no one edits me. They all know that edit her. No.
I love that.
But I think it's, I've never done, even in the infomercial days back in the 80s, even then there were focus groups and I was never into that. Like I don't do focus groups. I don't do testing. And that's not to say, of course, when you're making shades, you know, coming out with new blush shades or lipsticks, you still want people to go, would you like these colors? Or what do you, how do you respond to that? That's kind of, and it's probably more like internal. I tend to, you know, because sometimes the more you can go out here and try to get too many opinions, it can take you away from the core and your intuitive sense. And I stay pretty true and close to that for myself. And I will let my team will do the data and the things that they want, and then they'll come back and we'll all share information and I'll hear it and, you know, decide a way forward. But for myself, and I can only just speak for me, I keep pretty much in my lane.
Yeah. That makes sense. Has it been, you know, over the time and doing such huge volume in sales? Like, how have you been able to build a team to sort of allow you to just focus on what you're good at, continue to be yourself? What have you looked for in certain team members, or how have you grown teams that have enabled you to be able to do that?
Well, for example, my CEO and co-founder and partner, we've worked together for 20 years and we've worked on other things together. So she knows me, I know her, and there's a comfort level. The president of my company, we've worked together on other things. So I know them, we have history, and I know where the fit is. And then I trust them to, as they're hiring the people that they also need to work with, you know, I'm not micromanaging that. I know that their instincts serve them and that we're all kind of coming from the same place. So I think that's really, and you have to have chemistry with people. You want people that are going to not all just think the same way you do, but you know that you're going to somehow come to a place of reason and things that make sense for who you are and what the brand stands for.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything that you, any decision that you've made, like looking back over your entire career, where you wish you had done something different in retrospect?
You know what? It's so interesting because when you are getting ready to turn 70 and you look back and you think, well, I've been doing this a long time, and all of the things that, you know, in the beginning when, you know, everybody said, how are you going to do this? Or there's so many cosmetic companies, and you just think, where's my place in this all going to be? And all the failures. I don't think there's anything different that I would do. I think that everything serves you along the way, as painful as it can be. And I would always, even when the challenges were coming, I really did try to turn that around and go, oh, this just means, you know, when I'm going to be talking to Takara or to Oprah or to whoever.
Wow, I love that.
I'll put you in the same sentence. But I'm going to be talking to whoever I'm going to be talking to. This is just going to be part of my story. This is going to be part of my evolution. And I've manifested it. I'm a big believer in, you know, seeing it. And once I can see it in my brain, I work to achieve it. I just wrote a book that's out right now called We All Worry, Now What? And
great title.
Do a little plug for my book. It's all out. And it's really the how-to. It's really how that I've navigated a lot of things through a lot of worry and anxiety, and you know how I've been able to succeed.
Yeah. I also just want to highlight that, speaking of Oprah, it did your No Makeup Makeup one when Best Cream Foundation of 2024. So that's quite the accolade coming from Oprah. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned all of the things that you've done in your life, which are exceptional, mm-hmm. building multiple brands, then, you know, giving back, writing books. How do you best manage your time, your workflow? You know, you mentioned these topics of anxiety and I think the world is only getting more and more anxious. Like, how have you sort of navigated balancing your time and having a personal life, and then those big emotions that come with the responsibility and the pressure of being an entrepreneur at this level?
Yeah. You know, it takes a lot of mastery to do that. And there's, I'm like everybody else, there'll be days where I'm like, and I'm going to lay down today for the rest
good.
Of the afternoon.
I'm glad you took a nap.
But I really know how to sort of, at this point, take the time that I need for myself, you know, whether it's through meditation or take myself off the calendar, you know, on this Tuesday this week, because I'm just going to go, you know, walk in the park or whatever it is. So I've gotten better of reading my own personal tea leaves of what I need. And I think that's really important. You have to be able to do that to then be able to step back in, because I work in so many different areas in the world of medical research, in the world of makeup. I always say how many M's I'm in: marriage, money, you know, mate.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So my life, like all of our lives, are very full, and I switch around a lot. So I try to, when I'm in this moment, being in the present, bring this. And then after this is off, I'm going to go and do something else and try to be very present for that.
Do you think that's something you've gotten better at because of these tools, such as a meditation, or something that's really also come with like age and just being better at like listening to yourself and learning, you know, how to slow down and be more intentional with your thoughts and time?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, but I'd say with age, yes, but people don't need to be like, oh, great. So I have to wait till I'm almost 70 before like my brain's going to calm down. No, you know, you can do it. You can be doing those kind of tips and tools and things now. I mean, that's kind of why I wrote this book, is sort of like, hey, this has been the recipe that's working for me. I just offer it up and see, you know, what in this might be helpful to you. But yeah, no, I think you got to sooner than later, because once you start doing that now at a younger age, it's going to be more, you know, just habitual, and it's going to be part of how you live your life.
Yeah, I think you have such an interesting perspective as well, being able to like see how the world has evolved in a similar category over decades. If someone wants to start a business today or wants to start their entrepreneurial journey, like what advice would you give them? How would you start in this digital age versus, you know, how things have changed in the last decade? What advice would you give them?
Well, I would take it out of first. I wouldn't be setting aside digital age, not digital age. First, you have to just get back, you know, start with the basics. Like, you have to have real passion around what you're doing. It's not about just like the money grab. It's got to be authentic and real passion around it. Like, what is that purpose that you want to bring to the world? What is that, you know, real energy that you have? And then you have to be someone, if you're like a shrinking violet, or you're going to like fold at the first no you get, or like, it's not going to happen for you, because you have to be super resilient. I always say, you know, perseverance is where the gods dwell. Like, you have to be able to persevere, to be able to be resilient. And that comes from more like authenticity and passion around what you're doing, and a real solid belief system in that. And then you find all the ways and the people, you start like building your tribe, your group, your friends, your support that are going to help you with that vision, and be very selective in that. And I think once you have those basics and that core, whether you're in the digital age now, or you were back where I was in infomercial land in the 80s, the basics don't change. You know, a lot of what I talk about is basics, good skincare, you know, no makeup, makeup. These are timeless things. So you have to start with a timeless kind of core of who you are and what you're up for before you start your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking back on your career, what's been the most rewarding part, or what's been the biggest highlight of your professional career?
Oh, I mean, just all the time of hearing people going, oh my gosh, I love this, or it really changed how I feel about myself, whether it was going into the jails, or like I said, the power of mascara, seeing that something what you would think is so simple can be so life-changing for people. That message alone, which, you know, inspired, as I said, two books, that's been the most rewarding. Even now, just people knowing that here it is all these years later, and people are still going, oh my God, I love this. And I feel like, yes, there was this whole period of time that I missed, but in a way I really didn't. I'm still hearing the same things.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation. Those books sound amazing. I'm going to have to check that out. The Power of Mascara. What a great name.
I was going to say the book was Redefining Beauty and Make Up Your Life. Power of Mascara is always just been a talk that I've given.
Oh, that's a talk. Good note. I appreciate that. But for my final question, what's next for yourself and No Makeup Makeup?
Well, we've got some great products coming up down the line. Not ready to talk about them quite yet, but
some
amazing new products coming out that, again, only not putting out anything until I'm like, oh, yes. So I'd say that. And then really joy. Joy is a big part of my life right now. As I said, on this birthday, another milestone one, I think will be to really enjoy all of this success and hard work and as well take some time for myself.
I love that. For anyone listening who wants to find out more on yourself and No Makeup Makeup, where can I direct them? And just confirming, it's currently only sold on your website?
Yeah, it's all direct. So they go to nomakeupmakeup.com.
Nomakeupmakeup.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. Be sure to leave a review and subscribe to all future episodes. For show notes and resources mentioned, go to glamandgrow.co. This show is produced by Wavebreak. If you're an e-commerce marketing leader who wants to take your email and CRM program to the next level, schedule a call with me today at wavebreak.co. Thanks so much for listening. This episode is brought to you by Wavebreak. Most brands don't email right, and it costs them. With ad costs getting more and more expensive, a world-class email and SMS program is essential. This is why Wavebreak exists. We're the premier email and SMS marketing agency that helps brands take their retention programs to the next level. If you want to learn more about partnering with us and how we can help, schedule a call with me today at wavebreak.co/call.